Greetings, listeners. I'm Dr. Clancy Seymour with my co-host, Dr. Vic Ramsey. Doc, how are you today?
I am doing great. I am here in the nice, beautiful weather down here in Brooklyn, New York. So greetings from Brooklyn to everyone, and thank you for joining us today.
Fitting, Doc. Fitting that you bring up New York City because we have quite a guest today. More on that in a second. But welcome to New York State. AFERD's A through Z Health and PE podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing the Meaningful Physical Education Framework with one of its founders, Dr. Douglas Gleddy. We are very fortunate to have Dr. Gleddy join us from the Great White North, my homeland, and the province of Alberta for today's show. Dr. Doug Gleddy is a professor in the Faculty of Education at the University of Alberta. He teaches physical education curriculum and pedagogy to undergraduate students. He also teaches graduate courses in health and physical education, reflective practice, physical literacy, and research methods. Dr. Gleddy's research foci include narratives of physical education, school sport, physical literacy praxis, meaningful physical education, and teacher education. Dr. Gleddy has a number of publications, including peer-reviewed journal articles, books, and also writes a blog. You can also connect with Dr. Gleddy directly on Twitter at Doug_Gleddy. Dr. Gleddy, thank you for joining us today. And please say hi to our listeners, our panel, and of course, the illustrious members of New York State, AFERD.
Thanks, Dr. Seymour. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me. And hello, New York State.
We are also fortunate to have you joining this year at the state conference later this month. Very exciting. So as previously mentioned, and along with Doug's impressive publication record, is his efforts with the Learning About Meaningful Physical Education blog, LAMP, LAMP for short. This is among the health and physical education profession's most popular resources, not only in the U.S., but around the world. Congratulations, Doug, your dedication to a new language of physical education is an inspiration to us all. Much appreciated. Vic, take it away, bud.
Yes, so there will be many of our students will be attending our session. There are PE and HEAT candidates from both undergraduate and graduate programs at Canisius University. So we have students who are taking a course in PE course with Dr. Seymour. Each student will be able to ask some questions to our esteemed guests. And therefore, we look forward to hearing from them engaging with our guests today. So these selected students will go ahead and commence asking their questions. So we'll have to start off immediately with Andrew Mana. Are you there?
Yes. Hello, everyone. Hi, Dr. Gleddy. My question is basically if you could share with us a little bit about the genesis of your book, you know, maybe what inspired you to write it, how it got started.
Sure. Thanks, Andrew. And I'm happy to be a little more informal, and it's just Doug that works. When I got my PhD, my wife said she would call me doctor if I would call her boss. So we just but we've remained on a first name basis in spite of that. So that's good.
I love it.
Just before I answer your question, Andrew, I just want to state too that the Meaningful PE framework and the research was really started with a paper from Tim Fletcher and Stephanie Benny, who was actually an undergraduate student at the time. And, they did a meta-analysis of research studies in phys ed and youth sport that all looked at children and youth's impressions of what they found meaningful. And that's where that framework kind of distilled from and building on some of Scott Kretschmar's work. Tim and Steph then reached out to Deirdre Cronin, who's at Mary Immaculate University in Ireland. And both Tim and Steph were at Brock University, just north of you guys in Ontario. And so they really kind of started to flesh things out. I actually came into this because I was talking to Tim about doing some research on joy and again, based on some of Scott Kretschmar's work. And Tim was like, well, we're doing this stuff on Meaningful PE. Do you want to be involved? And so I was like, yeah. And Tim is, and Deirdre and Steph are some of the best people to work with that I've ever known. And so I was like, yes, I would happily go through. So I wouldn't consider myself a founder of Meaningful PE. I'm happy to be along for the ride. I've developed some knowledge. I've been doing some research on it, and I'm part of the team for sure. But then to get to your question about the genesis of the book, it was really, can we find a way to, you know, can we find a way to pull this together in a way that's meaningful? And we're going to keep using that pun every once in a while, but that is really meaningful to practitioners, to people that are in the field. And what does that look like? And can we get different perspectives from the teacher education side of it, but also the implementation side, and then also just the student side? So, you know, we met together to kind of to hash out the book. And when you do a proposal, you have to lay everything out, and you actually have to have the proposal reviewed by a group. And so we got some really good feedback from folks. I really enjoy the book. I find it fun to read. One of my favorite things that I've done with it in the last while is this was actually over COVID, towards the tail end of COVID. I was supposed to go into a school to work with their phys ed department on Meaningful PE, but we couldn't do that. So what we basically did was a book club, and we read the book, and we just each month we would meet and talk about a chapter and just go through. And I recorded all those, and I hope to release some findings on that eventually. But it was just a really good mechanism to just talk with people about Meaningful PE and about what's meaningful for them as teachers of physical education and also as learners. So that's probably a lot more than you wanted to hear, Andrew, but I think I might have answered your question somewhere in there.
Sounds great.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
Yes, that's thank you so much. That's great. Let me remind if it's okay with our previous the person who just asked the question, our friend Mr. Manna, could you just introduce yourself, and that's for everyone else to just introduce yourself to our listeners. Let us know where you, if you're teaching, if you're a student, if you're what have you. Just introduce.
That's yourself. A good idea, Dr. Yeah, Andrew. Sorry. So let's have all of our guests who are asking questions just introduce themselves quickly and tell us a little bit about yourself before you ask your question, and we'll go back to Andrew and put him on the spot real quick. Go ahead, Andrew.
No worries. Apologies. Yeah, my name is Andrew Manna. I'm in the master's program at Canisius for PE and health. I'm currently working as a building sub in a high school, but I do get to spend a lot of time in the gym and with their PE program, so that's nice.
Awesome. So I think up next we have Robert Bice. Is that said that correctly, my friend?
No, I think there's been a quick change. It's Mr. David Zuckerman is next.
Oh, Mr. Yeah. Zuckerman. Awesome. Yes. Mr. Zuckerman.
Hey, Mr. Zuckerman. Yep, right here. Nice to meet you guys, Dr. Gletty. I am a phys ed teacher for the DOE, so right in New York City, but I'm in the Bronx, actually. I work in a District 75 school, so special education. It's my third year here. I love it so far. During my free time, I play a lot of hockey and pickleball, and I also coach tennis. So that's a little bit about me.
Mr. Zuckerman, I'm sorry. Could you tell our listeners and remaining of our audience how about what's District 75?
District 75 is a certain type of district that hosts all children with disabilities. It's a lot of students have different types of disabilities, so the district tries to place them coordinately where they should be placed. So I'm working with emotionally disturbed and autistic kids at a high school in the Bronx.
Awesome. Thank you.
No problem. Yeah. So my question for Dr. Gletty is that you state that meaningful physical education, it's a way to involve students more in age-appropriate decision-making to promote active learning. Well, how do you determine what is age-appropriate decisions for each student?
Yeah, thanks, David. That's a super easy question. There's a chart, and you just look at the kid's age, and then you look at where they're at, and you just go there.
That's how you do it. I love it.
No, it's a really good question. question. And I like how you connected the age appropriateness with the decision making. So it's certainly not an exact science. There's no graph that way. However, we can, you know, we do, hopefully as phys ed teachers, you have understanding of some basic developmental levels, motor skill development, some of that stuff, because that all plays into those pieces. But also that, as you mentioned, working in District 75, and thanks for the explanation, because that was going to be my first question back to you. So thanks, Vic, for that too. Like, teaching ultimately is relational, as is life. Like, you really can't get by without relationships. And as a teacher, crafting those relationships, part of that is getting to know your students, getting to know their developmental levels, their maturity levels, their motor skill competence, their social interactions. If you want to look at all four dimensions, you want to look at their moving, thinking, feeling, acting person. What are they in all those dimensions? And it's not easy. And you know, you've got, I don't know how big your class sizes are where you at up here. We're looking anywhere from 25 to 35, sometimes 40. Sometimes our elementary teachers are, unfortunately, have like three classes together at once. So it's not very easy. But part of that is there's a little bit of hit and miss with things. And so I would say, starting with an easier level of appropriate decision making according to age, starting with, you know, do you want to practice throwing with X or with Y? Today we're looking at moving through space. Do you want to do that, like moving through open space? Do you want to do that through a basketball experience or through a flag football experience? And it really depends how your class is set up, how that might go. But the other piece with that is the meaningful PE framework. When we kind of zoom out of it a bit and look at the pedagogies, there's two pieces there. So there's the democratic pedagogies, which is autonomy supportive practices. So that's part of our goal. We don't want students to be dependent on us as teachers. We want them to be autonomous learners. We want them to begin making their own decisions for themselves. So we want to support that as much as we can. Part of the way we do that is through reflective practice. So one of the things that one of the studies that Dr. Tim Fletcher did was, and one of the findings was that it's worth sacrificing some activity time for some reflection time. Now, if you can make that happen in a classroom setting, or you can make that as streamlined as possible, of course, we want kids moving as much as possible. But, and maybe I'll ask, can I put you on the spot, David?
Not a problem.
Okay. You might not think that after I ask you the question, but we'll start. What's the so in your district and in your area, you said you're in the Bronx, what's the aim or the purpose of physical education?
The aim for physical education is to, number one thing is to keep them safe, and two, to teach them different lifelong skills.
Perfect. And so the thing is, if we're teaching lifelong skills, and to go back to that idea of autonomy and being able to make appropriate decisions, we need to start that now. You don't start that afterwards. When I talk with especially pre-service teachers here, like, if the goal was to get kids fit, then we just walk for a half an hour around the school. And by the end of the year, they'd be fitter because they'd have a half an hour physical activity a day. But as you said, that's not the goal. The goal is for them to have a safe learning experience. And the goal is them to be lifelong.
Yeah, I want them to find something that they enjoy, that they'll actually do for exercise, you know, outside of the gym. So I teach them, we do a lot of different sports in my class. I teach them a lot of different things, and sometimes they like it, sometimes they don't, but overall everyone usually finds something that they like, and they could use that outside of the classroom.
Yeah.
Outside absolutely. Of the gym.
And so that's where the decision-making piece lines up. Like, so with our curriculum here, the express goal is that children will develop the knowledge, skills, and attitudes to be physically active for life. So it's very similar. And again, that's what we're going to. We're not going to specific, I want to develop fantastic pickleball players. No, we want kids to have skills, for sure. But we also want them to have those attitudes and the knowledge to be able to cognitively interact with things.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Okay, so you nailed the question. Well done.
You went above and beyond your answer, so thank you.
Love it.
Thanks, Doug. That's good stuff. Before we ask our next question, I can't help but think, what about the old PE necessity? And again, we know the answer to this, but for our listeners and for our teacher candidates here, listening as well and learning about the meaningful PE framework, and our graduate professionals who are in the trenches right now, like David just mentioned, what about current PE necessitates the hard work of Tim and Deirdre and yourself with the meaningful PE framework? Can you give us a little context?
Yeah, and as a profession, we've been studying ourselves for a long time.
Yeah.
And we've been trying different things, and we have to do that. And I would say, there are elements. I would say that quality phys ed teachers have been doing elements of meaningful phys ed for a long time. Because you've connected with kids, you've done these things, you've thought carefully about your curriculum. But I think increasingly as our world changes, and we're not here to solve all the health problems, but we can be a part of that. In that, if the previous goals of physical education that may have been explicitly mentioned in curriculum about, we want fit kids, we're going to have these high level sport people come out of phys ed somehow, that's just not, it hasn't worked. It's resulted in people that hated phys ed. I was just talking to one of my staff members here at the university, and they were just saying, "Oh, you're doing a chat." And I remember I was playing phys ed, and we just kind of kicked around a soccer ball and had fun, but we didn't really, there weren't any rules, or we didn't really do anything. So to me, it goes back to the learning. What are kids learning? And if we want them to learn to be lifelong physically active for life, then we have to take some approaches that actually, so the why has to meet, yes, the what has to meet the how.
Absolutely. It's just ironic that yesterday, in White Plains, we were having a conversation with teachers, and that's one of the questions I asked: how do you know your students are learning? And then here you are mentioning this to our audience today. So thank you for that question, for that answer.
Love it. Okay, so Vic, I think we're on to Mia, right? Yes. Okay, so our next person, our next graduate student who's going to ask Doug a question is Mia Maranakas. Maria, I think I annihilated your last name. My apologies, but Mia has been a student of mine in a couple of graduate courses and doing outstanding. Go ahead, Mia.
Hi, I'm Mia Maranakas. Maranakas, yeah.
Maranakas, yes. Okay. My apologies.
It's okay. I am a second year grad student. I haven't started teaching just yet. I got my undergrad in special ed, so I'm a licensed special ed teacher, but I'm currently a grad assistant for the softball team at Canisius. So that's what I'm doing right now. My question kind of goes along with what you guys were chatting about with David, how you were saying a big part of the framework is to give students choice. So my question was, how do you create like the proper balance of good classroom management and still give them that choice and avoid it just being students only doing what they want to do?
Yeah, thanks, Mia. I appreciate that. So first of all, respect and choice, I think, are closely related, because there has to be a sense of mutual respect in order to get to that idea of choice. One of the questions that often comes up, and I was just doing some professional development at a school that we're doing research with just last Friday, and one of the questions came up about, well, if I give these, so this is junior high, like grade eight, right? And grade eight tends to be where all this stuff hits the fan sometimes. Like, it's just, yes, not, right? It's just, yes, that's what grade eight is.
Things change, indeed, yes.
Yeah. And so the question was, well, if we want to have this choice, how do we know that kids are going to choose to challenge themselves? How do we know that they're going to actually choose to learn and better themselves and do that? And the fact of the matter is, the simple answer is, we don't. But if we create that culture of respect, and we create a culture where, and David, you mentioned this already too, but that safe learning environment, and that's safe physically and emotionally, but safe is not the right word, because we want people to feel safe enough to take risks, which sounds like an oxymoron, and maybe it is, but we want that idea so that kids feel that, yeah, I could choose this, but that's not my level of skill. And so I'll give an example from one of the features of the Meaningful PE framework. So we did some work with Andy Vassily, who teaches at a school in Saudi Arabia. And he specifically was using, and maybe you read this article, but he was specifically using the feature of challenge to direct a unit on cycling. And he has kids in that class that have never cycled before or just barely learned. And so he goes through a whole series of inquiring with kids. What are you looking forward to about this unit? What might be difficult? What do you want to learn? And so there's that reflective piece in there too. But what he's done is he's created a culture where kids are like, you know what? That skill right there, that's too hard for me right now, but I'm going to find that just right challenge. So he actually uses little poly dots, on chart paper and has students rank things like, can I ride down this hill? Can I ride through the sand or across gravel or over this little jump? And they really self-reflect and they work with each other to do that. So to me, it goes all the way back to culture. And how do you create that culture in your gymnasium? And it takes time. And I know my first 3 years teaching junior high, it was a struggle the first couple of years. By the time I taught the same kids, I had taught all these boys in grade 7 and I taught them grade 8. By the time I got to grade 9, we had developed such a good mutual respect and we had that culture in the gym where the kids felt safe to do things. I felt safe to do things and we could really proceed. So I think that respect and that choice go hand in hand.
Thank you.
Love it.
And if I'm talking too long in this stuff, just do this, like just wave, stop. Cause I really like this. So it's fun to chat about.
No, but that relevance speaks to the meaningful PE framework. And that if you can't get that student buy-in, that relevance, that why, it's all related for sure. I love it.
Absolutely. Well, and if I can add, since you gave me permission to talk more, Clancy, if I can add one piece, I used to give an assignment to my pre-service teachers, and I haven't done it in a while, but it was to look at representations of phys ed teachers in popular media.
Yeah. Right?
So like,
oh wow,
what's her name in Glee? And there's countless examples, right? And I asked them to take that. And then how might that influence the way the kids interact with you? And this one student wrote, his name was Daniel. He wrote a brilliant paper and he looked at it and he said, you know what? I don't care. He said, it doesn't matter what those kids see because once they walk into my gym and they meet me, they're going to know that I don't think girls are less capable than boys. I don't just cater to athletes. I don't yell and scream at kids. And he's like, that's the culture I create. And it was a beautiful answer because he's just like, that's not me. That doesn't happen in my gym. And that speaks to that culture that I was trying to explain to you a little bit.
No, you didn't try to explain. You explained it very well, dog. I must say. That was well put together, my friend. And I wrote down the comments about what you shared about culture indeed. And I highlighted that. Thank you so much. I think next up we have Jared Stolle, and I hope I am pronouncing that name correctly. Jared Stolle. Introduce yourself, my friend.
Jared, are you there?
Jared?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Okay, go ahead.
My name is Jared Stolle. Right now I'm currently a building-based substitute teacher at Camarese High School. I also varsity lacrosse and football too. So that takes up a lot of my time. My question for you, Doug, is, are we seeing significant changes in PE programming as a result of the meaningful PE framework?
Yes. Next question, please.
In Kenmore, New York, or Kenmore schools is a suburb of Buffalo, Buffalo Public Schools, first ring Buffalo Public Schools. So just so you get some context there, Doug.
Yeah, no, that's great. And Jared, and this is the second time I've heard this building-based substitute. So that's basically you're assigned to a school and you do coverage within that school?
Yeah, so like for me, they know that I'm a PE major and the other ones too. So like if you're like a science major, they try to put you in at science. So I'm in for PE for most of the days. So they just try to put you in where you fit. and where you can help them out the most.
Okay, perfect. I am very hopeful that we will see some changes, and I think we have seen some changes in phys ed programming and teaching. I think as the, you know, such as these classes, as the framework kind of gets infused and people are like, oh yeah, I can, that seems interesting. I think we can do that. You know, we're hopeful that it's spreading. I see people picking up the book and commenting on things. There's Alex Becky, who is I Am Sporticus on Twitter. He has brilliant posts about his engagement. He's now working on a PhD in the UK. And we are also, from an evidence-based perspective, or from a research evidence-based perspective, we're starting to see that spread to different researchers, and they're trying the framework out in different ways. Our team is growing and improving. I've got a new PhD student, Ty Riddick, who also writes about meaningful PE and has in the past. He has a blog as well. So we're starting to get those pieces. We're looking at how to, so one of the projects we're doing right now is called Champions of Meaningful Physical Education. So we've identified these champions that are doing things really well, and we're creating communities of practice to help that grow. So we are seeing those kind of things. We're seeing schools like Andy Vassily's in Saudi Arabia pick it up. I had a PhD student a couple of years ago who did work with a number of schools. She did some really, really cool work, and she kind of went back even sort of before the framework, and she used this software called group concept mapping, which is really cool. And she worked with a group of secondary students as well as their teachers. And she didn't research the framework. What she did is she researched them independently on what these kids find meaningful in physical education. And it certainly confirmed things from what we found from the literature review, but it also brought up things like kindness. These kids valued kindness as part of physical education. And that, I think, speaks to that idea of respect, right? And she also found that competition can be a part of meaningful phys ed if it's done properly. And the students recognize that there's good competition and bad competition. The other thing she recognized, which brings me back around to your question, Jared, is that quality teaching and a quality educational experience was important for people to find phys ed meaningful. So that means the quality of the teacher matters, the quality of the pedagogy matters. So as I mentioned earlier, I do think many phys ed teachers who are doing good things in their programs and with their students were already incorporating elements of this framework, whether they knew it or not. And so I do think it's helping to make some change. But I also think we've got a long way to go yet. And sometimes phys ed teachers were our own worst enemy. And when we don't hold each other accountable, when we don't hold ourselves accountable, I teach mostly now in the elementary area for elementary physical education. And sometimes the student teachers will ask, well, how often does a principal come in my school and come and see me teach in the gym? And I'm like, usually never. Wow. They're like, well, who holds me accountable? You do. You hold yourself accountable because you know the curriculum. You know how you've been taught. You're going to be reading the research. You're going to be doing what you can. And yes, I know that many of you are coaching and you're doing all sorts of other things and you have families, but you're also professionals. So you're doing your job.
Right. Doug, what I'm hearing also is being advocates for discipline. And I'm hearing that loud and clear as you're presenting these suggestions, being accountable for ourselves and advocating for our discipline. And making that
agreed, yeah. Vic, for sure. The other thing I'm surprised about is you've alluded to the brilliant Alex Becky and perhaps given away his alias. The Sporticus blog for sure is something I utilize all the time. My students may recognize the blog by the Drowning in the Shallows title, but he is a brilliant guy for sure, Doug, and it is surprising. You know, I've had a chance to podcast with him a little bit and Ash Casey out of the UK, and yes. I'm shocked that he is doing his PhD now, because you would think he already has it with how brilliant he is, for sure.
Right. Yeah. No, he's great.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Next up, we have Sean Albertson. Sean, please introduce yourself to our listeners and to our guests.
How you doing? My name is Sean Albertson. I've been teaching special ed for about 15 years. I work at a 853 school. I'm not sure if any of you guys know Devereaux Advanced Behavior Health. It's a little north of Poughkeepsie in New York. And I decided in the last year that I wanted to move into PE, and New York State, you know, through the TEACH program offered a not so difficult pathway. So I decided to start up and, you know, just started up this past August. My question for you, Doug, the first part of it was kind of answered by, I think, David and Mia. So I'll just move on to the second part. I'm really fascinated by this meaningful PE. The kids that I work with have a lot of disabilities, and they have a lot of different ranges of abilities and not so much abilities. So we have to kind of, you know, engage them and get them to engage in physical activity and things that they like to do, and they don't like to do a lot. So it's but away from the type of school that I work at, do you think that middle school and more so high school kids should be able to have elective PE classes to kind of stimulate what they want to do and kind of like maybe branch off of what colleges do? Because when I went to college, I remember my first year, I was able to take fencing and badminton, which was kind of cool. But, you know, it may not be for everyone. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, and it's a and thanks, Sean. It's a really interesting question, and I'd like to throw something back at you if I can. Just to, since you've been in the school system for 15 years, you said, right?
Yes. So,
what's the purpose of schooling? The purpose of education.
To get them into gauge and to learn as much as they can, and, you know, on their own terms, I guess. You want them to get something out of school, you know, whatever it is, you want them to get something. If they're not getting anything, then, you know, it's doesn't serve a purpose.
Yeah, fair enough. And I'm gonna ask one more question, because what you answered really well there was the how, because we want them in school, we want them to engage, we want them to learn. But why do we even want them in school? What's that purpose of school? Where does it fit in the grand scheme of things?
So they can become, you know, productive adults. I mean, they need to be able to take care of themselves when they get out of school. And my population, you know, a lot of them go into adult placements, or they go home and they stay with their parents. But, you know, we try to get them to be as independent and productive as possible on their own without having to rely on, you know, someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, brilliant. That's perfect. And I did a look a number of years ago just across Canada at the different ministries of education, and they phrase it in slightly different ways, but it really comes down to citizenship. We want, one of the purposes of school is to prepare people to be productive, successful, active citizens, however we want to do that. And in today's world, like, health and physical education is more important than ever for people to be successful. And for the populations that you're working with, it certainly is, because, you know, we may have, like, for me personally, I may have a physical activity window like this of things I can choose to do, but someone who is very constrained with other things, it might be a window like this. So we want to give them the most opportunity for success. So I think in that light, and depending what you mean by elective, like I do think there should be a base level of physical education all the way across. And I think it should be all the way through to grade 12 when you leave. But in that high school piece, I can see there's opportunity for more choice. So I'll address the high school piece first. So maybe if you have that base PE, you know, up to grade 8, and then when you get into grade 9, you still have to do some form of physical education, but it's more elective based. Like, you can choose, I'm going to focus on invasion games, or I'm going to focus on dance, or I want to do a couple of those things. That would be a great model to look at. I know a couple of years when I was teaching junior high I had a very good colleague who, she would teach the females and I would teach the males. And we were just like, this is not a good use of our time. This is not a good division of labor. So what we would start to do is, when exactly what I just said, if we thought, okay, we want to teach invasion games right now, So she might do basketball. I might do flag football. And we asked the kids, where do you want to be? And sometimes she would have 40 kids and I would have 20, but she had 40 kids that chose flag football. And so we were able to make it work because we, you know, we taught in the same timetable. We made that work, but there, that's where it speaks to that choice. And the very first question from, not the first question, the question from David on age appropriateness.
Yeah.
As kids get into those early mid teens, being able to make more of those choices, that's part of the personal autonomy that starts to drive them. Like, think of your own physical activity. If you like, and I'll go back to you, Sean, what do you like to do?
I like to play softball and, you know, basketball in my free time. And that was one of the things when I first started taking this class was about the multitask and sports thing. I was like, you know, I was one of those kids who enjoyed doing those things, and not all the kids in the class did. But if I was doing other things, maybe I wouldn't have been as interested as maybe someone else would. So,
Yeah. And you like, trying to go fringe, like, do you, is there any physical activity you don't like?
Not that I can think of. I mean, if I haven't participated in it, I mean, I don't play volleyball. I'd like to do this. I like to be in competitive sports for the sports that I like to play in, I guess. And so.
And these are decisions that we should be able to make as adults. Like, no one should be forcing you to play volleyball if you don't want to.
Right.
Right. Especially when you go, but I could just play softball over there. Why do I have to play volleyball? And they're like, no, you have to play volleyball. Well, that probably means you're in a communist country of some sort. So we don't want to go down that road, but at the earlier ages, we need to have those fundamental movement skills. We need to have introduction. We need to build the skills and competencies so that when we get to that age, when there's time for more choice, then we can start to give students more choice. So if that's what you mean by electives in there and doing that, then I'm in favor of figuring that out, as long as the whole concept of physical education is not elective.
Right. Yeah, that's why I said more towards middle school, high school, and maybe at the tail end of middle school. Obviously, in primary school, they need to learn and they need to move around and kind of they be structured. So,
yeah, and the question I was, because I did get sneak podcast tip, I got some of these questions in advance, so I could write down a couple notes. But one of the things too, nobody ever asks, you know, well, should math class be mandatory after grade 9? Like, should it really? How about English? Or how about science? Should that? And nobody asks that. Now, there is a time when kids start to stream and go, okay, I'm going into the sciences. I'm going in this way. That's fine. That happens. But initially, we want people to be able to be active citizens. We want them to be able to have financial literacy, to be able to figure out what a compound mortgage does. We also want them to be aware of, I'm looking for a summer sport. I would like to play softball. And they can do it.
Right.
Thanks, Sean.
That's a great point, Doug, too, is that, you know, something I stress a lot with our teacher candidates, and not so much the grad students because they've heard it earlier on in their journey, but that idea of that plant and how the plant, for it to reach its full potential, needs sunlight, water, and clean air and rich soil and all of those things to flourish. And the same thing with a child: physical education, music, art, mathematics, science, same thing. So that's a critical piece to all of this.
For sure. And Doug, you said something that when you asked Mr. Adverson the question, it made me think about self-reflection and how we put together our own philosophy of education. I love how you presented that piece of gem there. Thank you so much for expanding on that question before answering that question. I love that approach because that provided some context to what you shared with us today and on advocacy and, of course, making a case for our philosophy of what we're teaching. So we have an additional, we want to give opportunity to other students to from Canisius University to ask questions. And we have someone on board already asking, and I would rather the person ask a question rather than read it off for them. Ellie Bates, is that sound right? Or is it Ellie?
Yeah, Ellie, please jump on. That would be great.
Go ahead, Ellie.
I'm like kind of nervous now.
Please don't.
I've been a student at Canisius. This is my first semester as a grad student. And I've noticed I have two placements, and they're both in lower income school districts. And I've already noticed, I'm a smaller woman, that in my secondary placement, there's a male and a female that co-teach together. And the female is like very obviously disrespected by a lot of these middle school aged young men. And so how would you deal with like those students and build that mutual respect there when you're not going to get any assistance from the parents at home?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, Ellie, and you should feel a little nervous about asking it. So that's good. It's a really good question, and it's not an easy, like there are no easy answers there. The biggest thing I think is it takes time. And you're going to have to give a lot more respect than you're going to receive initially. And I know that's hard. I will never experience that the same way as you do, because I'm a rather large adult male. And, you know, when I taught junior high, there were some kids that definitely were just like, yeah, I'm not going to disrespect you, because if somewhere in the back of my mind, I think you're going to do something to me, even though I would never do that to a kid. But I also have seen in my teaching career some fantastic, and I'll keep talking about female teachers because that was some of the basis of your question, who just command respect, not by saying respect me, but just by their presence, by the way they hold people accountable. I do think there's a big role for administration there to hold folks accountable as well. But I do think, again, I'll just reiterate that it's going to take a while of giving respect, and you can't kind of give in. And I'll give an example from my own context, realizing that it's different than yours, because I did my first teaching gig was at a very low income school with a lot of problems, a lot of fabulous kids, a lot of kids that just came to school with a lot of baggage. Right. And I mean, we had to bust up a meth lab across the street. Just to give you the context of things. And there were definitely kids there who did not have good adult role models at home or really anywhere in their life. So number one, school might be the only place where they can find that. So if you can provide that, kids are seeking boundaries. They want those boundaries. They test them to know they're there. And that's psychology. It's not my area, but I've read enough in there, and I'm a parent. So I have to know some of that stuff. But in this, so I took over a class, and I won't tell you the whole story because it's too long, but basically a teacher in the school threw a kid into the lockers, and so was suspended, and they couldn't get another, they had substitute teachers in for 2 weeks. Nobody would come back. Two or three of the substitute teachers at lunchtime threw the keys on the desk and said, "Don't ever call me again." So the principal knew I had worked in that school for about a month before, and he phoned me up and said, can you come into the school? And you know, these kids, can you do it? That was the hardest year I've ever had teaching, also the most rewarding. But literally I had this one grade eight class that they'd be sort of good. I would do this, come back, and there's a fight over there. There's, you know, kids throwing stuff over there, everything else. And I had a brilliant curriculum coordinator who was just a fantastic administrator, but also a very good teacher. And I came to him like, "Chris, I can't get these kids to do anything." I was teaching them math and science at the time. And I'm like, I can't. Like, they're just, and he's like, and I won't use strong language, but he basically just said, you know, because I said, "How do I get through the curriculum?" And he said, "F curriculum. That's not your priority right now. Your priority is developing these relationships. Your priority." So he goes, "What's the biggest problem in the classroom?" I said, "Well, if I get them into an activity, they can usually hang on to it. But then when we do a transition, they lose it." He's like, "Okay, for this next week, just work on transitions. Just work on that." And I'm like, what about curriculum? And he goes, again, F curriculum. It doesn't matter right now because you'll never get there if you don't establish these respectful relationships. So I'll always value his advice. And I won't say, you know, I did that for a week and then everything was perfect, because it certainly wasn't. But it was that investing the time and energy, and there was a lot more talking with people, and there was, you know, having administration come and remove kids from class sometimes that couldn't handle to be there. But we certainly improved over the year. And then the last thing I'll say about it is that relational piece, you know, the old, I think it's Mother Teresa, you know, people don't care what you know until they know what you care, or that you care. It's cliche, but it's also true. Because once you can get in there and establish a bit of a relationship, and begin to lay those foundations, then you can start to build from there. But it's not easy.
Yeah. So tomorrow I'm filming my lesson with these middle school kids. So that was part of that whole thing, is I'm about to go into that tomorrow. And, you know, these mentor teachers have been telling me about what a difficult group it can be. But I've been putting in some work trying to like participate with them, build some rapport with them prior to this. So hopefully it'll go well. But thank you very much for your answer.
No problem. And it's teaching is the hardest job in the world, as far as I'm concerned.
Best wishes.
Thanks, Doug. Yeah, that's good stuff. And it is the hardest job, but it's also the most rewarding in a lot of ways. So, and I love your advice to Ellie and others alike. You know, we can't know about the challenges until those challenges are voiced. And even when it's uncomfortable, and sometimes we need to be uncomfortable to get comfortable. So that's really, really great advice. And on top of that, to Ellie, to mention to her that you're going to have to give more right now, and in order to get the respect that you deserve, perhaps later, is for sure important for our teacher candidates, particularly that are just embarking on their careers, and then our graduate students that are in the midst of their careers. So. Good advice indeed.
For Ellie, Dr. Ramsey, don't give up, get better.
Yeah, for sure. So we actually have time for another question from either a graduate student in the course, or perhaps a teacher candidate for Doug. Anybody want to ask Dr. Gledy a question regarding the meaningful PE framework or something along those lines? He's got a bevy of experiences. Anything for the good of the order? I do have a question. Stephen Cohn, go ahead.
Hi, how's it going? I had a quick question for you, Dr. Gledy. I was doing a little research on you, and I noticed the recurring concept of joy and how it relates to participation in physical activity, and specifically across the lifespan. And I was wondering how you cultivate joy in a diverse population of students, like a PE class.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. And that's something I struggle to research more, because it's so hard to nail down. But that's where I do like the meaningful PE framework, because it leads that way. And if you go back to the original article by Fletcher and Benny, and you look there's these five features that they came up with, but then they're kind of surrounded by this idea of delight or joy, which again comes from Scott Kretschmar's work. And it's elusive. Like it's not something you can just grab every day. And sometimes finding joy within a phys ed class is difficult, if not impossible. I think we can start to build the building blocks. And an example I often use is snowboarding. I like to snowboard. We got the Rockies over here. It's great to be there. Number of years ago, I was there by myself. I like to be like the first one up the gondola if I can. And as I'm going up, actually it was a chairlift. As I'm going up the chairlift, there was like, we had a foot of powder. It was a gorgeous day. As I can hear people going down, all I hear across the hill is, woo! Yeah, awesome. Yeah. But if you've ever snowboarded or skied, although why would you ski when you can snowboard? But if if you've ever done that in powder, like you have to be a decent snowboarder in order to really work that powder and make it be a really joyful experience. So you have to have done the work beforehand. You had to have the competencies and the skills and the time on the hill and all that kind of stuff. So joy in any activity is similar. It's, you know, the other thing I do a lot of now is mountain biking, and it's, you know, I built my technical skills over the years, and I maybe in a season of biking, I'll maybe find like two or three runs that are just pure joy in a whole season. So with kids and in a diverse piece, I think it goes back a little bit to that. What's the personal relevance? So what's going on? What's that just right challenge? And that's a really cool piece linked with joy, because if you read any of Mihai Csikszentmihalyi's stuff on flow theory, and by the way, it took me 5 years of postdoctoral work to pronounce his name properly, but it basically, to sum it up, it's like, if your skill is here and the challenge is here, it's too hard. You're going to be bored. If the skill level is here and the challenge here, it's too easy and you're bored. The ultimate is when the skill is here and the challenge is just above and you're constantly bumping. And so that's where you find that opportunity and to get to know your kids, get to know what they're good at, and help them set those foundations. And maybe they'll find that joy on their own. And maybe they'll find some pieces of joy within a class in a good spot, but you can't, it's kind of like, it's like with most of teaching, you can't like, use the example of moving to open space. You can't just teach someone how to move to open space. You have to provide experiences where they can recognize for themselves and feel the benefits and what happens when you're able to move to open space. And so you can help create the environments to make that happen, but you can't go, okay, kids, joy time, let's do it. Obviously it doesn't work that way, right? But we can facilitate those experiences. And it's the same thing with meaningfulness. It's you can't force PE to be meaningful for people. But if we have an understanding of the framework and these features and yourself as a teacher and your students, you can start to set up those experiences. Sorry, I really like long answers. I'm sorry, Stephen.
I love it.
I love it, Doug. That's fantastic. And I'm going to ask you a follow-up to that. But before I do so, I'd like to just end off with Steve introducing himself. Tell Steve a little bit about yourself so that the listeners can know about you too. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, yeah. So my name is Stephen Cohn. I live in Cheektowaga with my wife and daughter. I currently coach sports at Nichols School in Buffalo, nice. New York. And I also coach lacrosse for Western New York Lacrosse Foundation and sports clinics as well.
Awesome. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. So, Doug, one thing that Steve touched on and you certainly hit out of the park is this, the idea of joy. But for our listeners who are later on, and even our guests today on the show, maybe could you explain the nuances between joy and, you know, you often hear in physical education, fun. And then you mentioned Dr. Kretschmar's work and delight. Can you kind of to explain the differences, the nuances between those terms?
Maybe. I'll take a quick stab. So fun is more fleeting. Easy to get together a group of people and go out and have some fun. You can do that. You can, you know, that's fairly simple. Joy, as I mentioned, is it's deeper. It's more fleeting. It requires more work. If you look at, and I'm not a huge, like there's a place for elite sport. There certainly is. But I'm much more committed to kind of that grassroots sport, but that's just my own thing. The only reason I say that is when you have people who have overcome, you know, great adversity to succeed at an elite level, they often they're very joyful, but they're crying because it was a painful process. It was difficult, but they're finding that joy. So it's a complex emotion. Kretschmar talks about, and I like the way he puts this, and he actually does a podcast with Andy Vassily where they talk about this a little bit. One of the ways he conceptualizes it is to look at the difference between riding a bike and being a cyclist. And if you're just a bike rider, you're probably not going to get to that level of joy. You'll have fun riding your bike. But when it becomes part of your identity and part of who you are, and you start to get out there, you're more likely to have those experiences that are going to lead to joy. And the snowboarding thing I mentioned is the same kind of thing. You know, do you just ride a board every once in a while, or are you a snowboarder? And that's a little bit simplistic way to put it, but it's kind of a way to put a pin in it a little bit, if that makes sense, Clancy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Great stuff. Great stuff.
But while I'm running next to cyclists, I'm gonna look at cyclists different now, dog. I promise you, man. I wonder when a cyclist, we go miles up north. I said, really? That's so. Now I'm gonna, using what you just said, I've said I'm gonna look at them differently now.
If you're a road cyclist, like, why would you put on all that spandex and weird gear if you weren't gonna find some joy somewhere down the road?
Yes, exactly.
For sure.
I remember when I was younger, I said the same thing, and now I'm doing that. Of course, I put on the Canadian colors, Dr. Ramsey, when I put on weird gear because I have to. But anyway, yeah, that's good stuff.
One of my rules for physical education is that students should not see their teachers in spandex. That's just an important rule.
I love it. I love it. That's great. Well, I do have a follow-up question, but I'm not going to monopolize because we have so many guests today. So we're kind of running low on time, Dr. Ramsey. So what do you think? One more question.
Oh, yes. I want to hear audience. More. I want to hear more. Doug.
One more question. And or otherwise we can wrap it up. So is there anybody else that has a question for Dr. Galletti? We have a big group, over 50 people in attendance.
I see Max. Max raises his hand. Is that you, Max?
Okay, Max, go for it. You beat yourself, Max. You won the, yeah, go for it. Introduce yourself first, please.
I feel great. I got some joy that I won.
All right.
So my name is Max Young. I'm from Addison, New York. I teach here. I'm a secondary teacher. I teach grades 8 through 12. This is my 11th year teaching. I've been coaching for, I don't know, since 2007. I've coached a bunch of different sports. My district, we just got sent to do some training on restorative practices. And within that, we talked about for like meaningful building relationships, all goes hand in hand with what we're learning here. And it's about trying to make connections early on. My question to you is, you know, when we're trying to set when you said respect and choice go hand in hand, when you choose to set up a curriculum, do you do something like a cooperative games in the beginning of the year so that you build that rapport as you design your PE curriculum, are you setting it at the beginning of the year? We're doing cooperative games. We're working on building before we get into any other units. How do you set up your curriculum?
Yeah. Thanks, Max. And congratulations on getting in at the last second. Well done. Yeah, actually it's interesting you mentioned that, because when I was teaching, and when I talk with my teacher candidates here too, I often mention doing cooperative activities, doing activities where you as the teacher have time to start to get to know the kids a little bit. So that's absolutely where that fits. And it also starts to set that culture in your class. And you have to start to set that culture from day one, especially if you're in, like if you're teaching grade 8 to 12, and I don't know if the kids that come in grade 8 are coming from another school or if you've already got to know them a little bit, but if you're that kind of front end teacher that gets all the new kids right off the bat, they don't know each other all the time if they're coming from different schools into the middle school or into the high school. So having those opportunities that they can build trust with each other, but also trust with you. And that's really, we haven't looked really at kind of the restorative practices literature and framework, but that's interesting. You made that connection. So thanks for that.
Great stuff. So before we close, Dr. Galletti, I know I've heard from Dr. Fletcher on this previously and others, but in my graduate course that students are taking right now with me, we're looking at Dr. Kirk and Dr. Casey's pedagogical models book, Models-Based Practices. And my question for you, and you can certainly do the elevator version in terms of the answer, is it fair to say that meaningful PE could be a pedagogical model, or is it truly not a pedagogical model?
Yeah, I think where we've landed so far is it's not a pedagogical model. We've stuck with the term framework because it's that bigger overarching piece. And you need to provide, and not that some of the models don't provide contextual autonomy, but we would more see, you know, using some of that models-based practice underneath the framework of as a way of incorporating or operationalizing the how of meaningful PE and a little bit of the what.
I love it.
That was great. My short answer of the night. That's good.
Well, I think it speaks well, because I think you started today's show talking about how, you know, wonderful physical educators from past and present have been doing many of the key components of meaningful PE for quite some time. So I think it speaks to the bigger picture that why it is a framework that can fit within any pedagogical model, really. Well done. Well, what do you think, Dr. Ramsey? I think that's a wrap. What do you think?
Yes, it is. And I must say, I wish we had more time to pick and to get some of those gems that Doug was sharing with our audience and with our
Yeah, it's been fantastic. So thank on you. Behalf of New York State AFERD, we'd like to thank Dr. Gleddy, our Canisius University graduate panelists, and Pete teacher candidates for joining us today to share thoughts and perspectives to our listeners, especially physical educators and our future professionals. The information shared today could serve as a catalyst for your ongoing preparation. This session will be posted on the New York State AFERD website, on our podcast channel. And of course, stay tuned for new and exciting episodes throughout the year.
Indeed. And please visit us on newyorkafert.org, social media handles at New York State AFERD, or call us at 315-823-1015 for more information. Please also take note of our many professional development events throughout the year, including our annual state conference at Turning Stone and Casino in Verona, New York. And it's this November, this month, from the 15th through the 18th. And I hope to see you there. And thank you all for being with us today.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you. Bye. Thanks, Doug.